Good morning. It's Wednesday, November 5th, and you're tuned into The Morning Show here on 88.5 KRFY. I'm Jack Peterson, not your usual Wednesday morning co-host, but we're here with a special day after election results roundup. I'm Jack, and Chris is here as well, Chris Bessler. Hi, Chris.
Good morning, Jack.
Oh, you're on mic. You're not on microphone two. You're over there on microphone
I'm
four.
I'm mic four today. Okay. Yes. So I'll say that again. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning, Chris. And we're also joined by Zach Hagedon, the editor-in-chief of the Sandpoint Reader. Good morning, Zach.
Good morning.
And Jack Freeman, a staff reporter for the Bonner County Daily Bee.
Good morning.
And let's get right into it before we get too far off into conversation. Let's talk about the results locally. If you were listening to Democracy Now, you probably heard the news you need for the nationwide results, but you haven't heard what transpired last night here in Bonner County. Chris, should we start with the Sandpoint results?
Yeah, let's talk about Sandpoint and Pondere first, and we actually were able to talk to some of the candidates and mayors there, and we'll play some clips from them from last night. Everybody was tired, including me.
Mm-hmm.
However, we are going to, towards the end, we'll go through all of the different ballot measures and races that were on the ballot in Bonner County. So in City of Sandpoint, we had four candidates running for three open seats, and I'll list them as they came in. Joel Espero, the incumbent, got 1,398 votes. He was the top vote getter. Second most was Joe Tate. He was a new challenger. And then third was Joshua Torres. I should say Joe Tate got 1,216 votes. Joshua Torres got 1,091. And then fourth place, so odd man out, is Rick Howarth. He received 1,073 votes. And Rick Howarth was an incumbent. So it was a mixed night for incumbents. One won, one lost last night. And it's kind of notable that the distance between Rick Howarth and Joshua Torres was only 18 votes. So, folks, if you're wondering whether your vote counts, last night it would have counted. You could have been one of the 18 that made the difference. And then probably maybe the biggest news on this election was the City of Sandpoint $130 million wastewater treatment plant bond not only passed, it passed by a margin of 89% to 11%. There were 1,749 voters in favor and 216 were opposed. And I will also rattle off the results for the Pondere local option tax as soon as I scroll down to that. This is the 1% local option tax that is on all sales of goods up to $1,000 in the city of Pondere. It's actually renewing a local option tax that they had for 5 years. That went before the voters for renewal last year was turned down. Different result yesterday. Those in favor were 77% and 23% were opposed. So that required a 60% majority to pass. It exceeded that very handily, although notable here, it was only 122 votes in favor and 35 votes against. So it's just a city with a small population, another example that, hey, voting matters because sometimes the numbers are pretty small by which things get passed. So with that, let's get some takes on things. Zach, what do you think this 89% margin for the $130 million bond means?
Well, I think it indicates, you know, what an effort the city of Sandpoint put into getting the word out about this issue. I don't know if we remember back to some of the reporting that was, you know, in both the Bee and the Reader on this issue going back even like a year or more, was that, you know, this is like the main priority for Mayor Grimm. And he's been very clear about this even since his election, that this was number one priority was to get the wastewater treatment plant project underway. And so this bond has been sort of the Hail Mary pass, I guess, that the city has determined this is how we're going to do it. And they knew going into the process of floating this bond measure, it was going to be a heavy lift to get voters to come across to understand, like, why should we, you know, authorize you to take out $130 million worth of debt, which will, as they were very clear about, probably increase our sewer bills by up to 100% over 5 years. That's a hard thing to convince people of. And when they did some of the initial sort of market testing for this issue, they did a survey, they hired a consulting firm, and the survey results that came out showed that people were very aware of the issue, but they didn't have a lot of trust that the city would be able to manage these funds in a way that was responsible. So I think that kind of was a little bit of a wake-up call for them. And we talked about that on the air when that survey came out. So they made a very concerted effort to explain to voters how necessary this was, and if we didn't do it, it was going to be even worse for us down the road. And that message clearly resonated. I think, and you look at the results, like 89%. That's a big win.
I've never seen that big a margin.
No,
ever.
It was huge. And they needed, you know, just a simple majority. Yeah. And it was like 50% plus one, and they far exceeded that. So whatever kind of money they spent toward the marketing consultancy that they hired was probably money well spent, you know, in terms of getting this thing passed.
Yeah, and maybe it just shows that people in Sandpoint feel a responsibility not to be putting pollution in our river and lake. We did get a clip with Mayor Graham last night, late, pushing 11 o'clock. Jack, can you
cue
that one up for us?
Yeah, here we go. Mayor Jeremy Graham.
So the results are in. What is top of mind for you?
Gratitude and just appreciation. The voters of Sandpoint recognized and saw what I saw when I ran for mayor, which was just the need to address the somewhat uncomfortable situation that we're in, which is a wastewater facility that is long past its useful life. So I couldn't be more thrilled that the voters supported this bond effort for the wastewater treatment plant, and the fact that we can now seriously engage with our partners at the state and federal level to replace a sewer plant that, quite frankly, should have been replaced 25 years ago.
So it was such a resounding win. I guess people got the point that the plant was really needed.
You know, I'm a bit shocked. I'm not really aware of a bond measure passing by such significant approval. I think it really shows a couple things. One, I got to say thank you to staff at City Hall and our team, Holly Ellis, our Public Works Director, and Rachel, and other community partners who really came together to make this happen. A lot of education starting from my first week as mayor. This has been my number one priority to fix this problem, not kick the can down the road. I think the voters, heard loud and clear that we've got a problem, and we're going to face that problem head on. No one's excited about the potential possibility for their utility rates to rise dramatically. I'm going to do everything I can with the year or 2 years I have left to make sure that the governor, our senators, our congressmen, everyone who has the ability to help support the replacement of this plant understands, yes, the voters have approved us to go into debt, but that level of debt is cruel. And historically, the federal and state government have helped support communities when facing big facilities like this. So really a lot of work still to do, but thanks to the voters, thanks to my team at City Hall, and thanks to those who helped make this happen.
All right, well, Mayor Jeremy Graham, congrats on the win. I know you were really pulling for this to happen. And hey, it's late, you can now get a good night's sleep.
Yeah, well, thanks to you for reporting and the events that you held to educate people, and thanks for all you do at the radio there. Keeps people informed, and that's important.
And that was Mayor Grimm speaking last night, late, pushing 11 o'clock, when we talked about the results on the $130 million wastewater treatment plant bond. So let's talk about the city council races. Jack Freeman from the Daily Bee. Do you have a take? It was kind of evenly distributed voting. Nobody ran away with it.
Very even. I think that was my number one takeaway from everything, was just how even it was. I think even Joel Espiro, who I think is probably one of the more popular city council candidates, only got a couple hundred more votes than Joe Tate, a newcomer. So I think we're seeing a lot of people wanting new voices on the city council. I think plenty of people wrote into the Daily Bee to express that, for sure. And I think we're kind of seeing the results of that, even though it was so close. You know, two newcomers getting a chance.
Yeah, it will be. It'll be a different city council. Two new seats on a six seat city council means, obviously, it means a third of the faces are going to be brand new, never before represented in city government. I find it, I guess, hard to say exactly what change this portends for the city, but there's certainly energy and enthusiasm with Mr. Torres and Mr. Tate, but I don't know how exactly they're going to channel that. I don't know. Any predictions for the future for what this means for city council? Anybody in the room?
I think it's important to remember that, you know, whoever gets put into this new council, this is the group that's going to be the council when the next census comes out in 2030. And when that census comes out, it's almost assured that we're going to surpass the 10,000 population mark, which means that we will no longer be considered a resort city under the Idaho legislature's definition of resort city status, which means that we're going to lose the ability to use the local option tax revenue gathering tool. And, you know, we've done a couple of these sort of LOTs over the years. We've succeeded with some, failed with others, but it's been a valuable tool, and we will not have that after 2030. So this council is going to be the last one, like the last group that has access to that thing. So it'd be curious for me to see if they're going to really lean into using that tool a lot over the next couple of years, in an attempt to sort of solidify it before it goes away.
Yeah.
And there was talk. I mean, we floated an LOT in the last election related to infrastructure like streets and sidewalks and things, and voters rejected it. And the idea being, at the time, the city hall said, we need to get this in place now because we're not going to have this later. And as I recall, and I could be incorrect, and if anybody's listening out there who knows better than me, the timeline for that LOT that they proposed was going to be like 20-something years.
Just 25 years.
25 years, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, they wanted a very long sunset clause on that so that we could use it into the future. So this council is going to have to grapple with that.
Ponderé made their term 10 years. Mm-hmm. So that could be a big factor right there if they feel like it's going to be forever versus
right.
more temporary, for sure. Did the reader ask that question in your questionnaire?
We did, yeah.
How did the candidates shake out on that question, whether we should try to go for another?
I mean, to be honest, I feel like some of the candidates didn't even know that was an issue until we brought it up to them. But once they sort of grasped the implications, the general feeling was, yeah, they feel like they should use that tool and get it sort of in place now so that we can use that into the future, even if we can't. And there was also some discussion, too, about, you know, some of the incumbents. I think Joel and Rick both sort of indicated, either in the questionnaire or in conversation, that they would be interested in working with our legislators to try to get that law changed at the state level so that we don't have that 10,000 cap. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of other resort cities, we're in a consortium, actually. Sandpoint's part of a group of Idaho resort cities that hired a dedicated lobbyist to work on this issue. And I know there's talk among the group, Sandpoint, you know, the other cities that are part of that, to get the legislation changed so that we don't all run up against this 10,000 population cap and then suddenly lose this really valuable tool. So I would prognosticate we're going to see more conversation about that.
Oh, certainly. Yeah. At the legislative level, I'm sure that's going to come up as an issue, but it would have face an uncertain fate there. Since
it would.
The Republican legislature tends to be try to keep tax measures pretty low.
Well, never mind the fact that the Idaho legislature and the Republican caucus in particular seems to have a penchant for limiting cities' abilities and powers to do various things. I mean, the resort, area of city impact issue, you know, where they sort of like limited cities' abilities to have an area of impact. there is a trend at the State House away from giving cities powers and then more toward like sort of giving counties authority. So this resort city thing would, I think, be a political football.
Yeah, that'd be tough. I'll just point out that Sandpoint is, you mentioned it's part of a consortium. Sandpoint's population has grown, but we are we're the 27th most populous city in the state. But Haley, Idaho, is also just about at the 10,000 mark, and they grew by 15% over the last, all these cities have grown by double digits in terms of percentage. Haley, Rathdrum, Payette, Emmett, all these cities are in exactly the same boat that we are. If their growth continues on the same trajectory in 2030, they'll be exceeding 10,000.
Jack, does your screen tell you if those cities have a local option tax in place?
Oh, good question. I'm sure my screen can tell me that. You'll have to give me a minute.
It might take some digging.
Yeah.
I'll throw this out there. So we have five precincts in the city. And it's just always kind of interesting to see how the precincts go on these different candidates. Two of them, the airport precincts and the Baldy precinct, actually, well, they all came in giving the most votes to Joel Esparro. But those two, Baldy and airport, the second place vote getter was Rick Howarth. So he did exceed the two challengers there, but in the three other precincts in town, Washington, Humbert, and Beach, the two challengers gained more votes than Rick Howarth did. So I don't know what that means in terms of our neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Jack, are you a city resident?
I am, yes.
Did you get, did anyone knock on your door, or did you, what kind of electioneering did you experience?
You know, I live on the third floor of an apartment building, so I don't get many people coming up to me. Yeah. So I did not have anybody knock at my door, but I know that a lot of people did. I know Josh Torres was very heavy into knocking on doors. We talked about that a couple of times when I spoke with him.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems that might have been the difference in those downtown areas of
18
going in
votes,
and talking to people.
Definitely the difference.
Yeah. That's right. I mean, those districts where, Torres exceeded Howarth, that's the part of town where it's easy to just walk the streets knocking on doors, not a lot of space.
I will say, you know, I interviewed all these candidates for the morning show here, and every one of them, I said, you guys, you might want to get out and knock on some doors because it really can make a difference. Right. How about you, Zach? You're in town. Did you see any candidates come by?
I didn't get any door knocks that I was home for.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's part of it. Yeah.
Might have showed up when I wasn't around. You know, I saw a fair number of signs. Not as many as I have in years past. I mean, I feel like this was a fairly low key election generally in terms of, you know, marketing.
Yeah, there weren't a lot of ads. I think Joe Tate ran a couple ads.
Yeah, he did.
And,
one of us.
Yeah, the signs were kind of evenly out there, I thought, between candidates.
But minimal compared to some of the past races, just anecdotally.
It wasn't any really divisive candidates that were saying they wanted to burn the place down.
Right.
Was part of it.
Well, and it seemed to me like also, you know, throughout the various forums and the questionnaires, you know, in the papers and on the radio and all the times that I heard them all speak, they pretty well sounded similar in terms of like their perspective on the direction of the city. They want to keep Sandpoint. They, you know, they want to give like local people a voice. I think they all were sort of in support of the wastewater treatment bond to varying degrees. I mean, the impact fee issue.
That was the one place where
Rick broke a little bit
from the other three. Yeah. And where he was opposed to the as it was passed.
Right.
He said that he would have given it more time to come into play and maybe been lower.
Yeah, more of a phased approach. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is kind of getting into the weeds a little bit, but maybe that's why we're here, is to get into the weeds. The impact fee issue, they were going to make those active in, I think, October.
Mm-hmm.
And it was going to be a one-time, pretty big increase, just like in one whack.
Almost double.
Yeah.
For most of them, yeah.
And that was to make up for, I think, 15-something years where we didn't raise those fees at all. And Rick was kind of the voice on the council during that debate that says, whoa, you know, let's slow down. Like, this is gonna really chill a lot of development. It's going to hurt a lot of people. Let's do more of a phased approach or don't even raise them at all, I think, at one point. I don't know if you remember this, Jack, if you reported that. But I seem to recall a comment from Rick from the dais saying, like, look, we haven't done this in 15 years. Why do we have to do it at all? Like, obviously, there hasn't been an urgency to fix this problem, quote unquote. So why fix it if it's not broken? The council voted differently, of course. Those fees are going to become active on January 1st, 2026.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I mean, that was one of the one areas that where I saw them sort of differ.
Yeah, I think that's what's going to be most interesting about this new city council is the two newcomers were very they talked about in the questionnaires and my conversations with them, focused growth and really kind of working with developers in that way. And I think that is something that resonated with city residents. And I think that'll be interesting to see how they move forward when they're tasked with stuff like the Avril Hospitality Hotel.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah.
Tonight's the big meeting.
Yeah, yeah, tonight on that. And we're going to see how that plays out when these people get behind the dais and actually have to make tough decisions on development. Because that is something that I think Tate and Torres both ran on.
Well, while we're on the subject, why don't you let folks know what the meeting's about tonight with Avril?
Jack's already had an article about it. I'm working on mine, okay. So I'll let him go ahead.
Yes, so there's a really low on the agenda, which is unfortunate, so it'll be a late night for me again. Avril Hospitality has sent a letter to the city saying that they will not move forward with their hotel project as long as the City Beach RV Park continues to be an RV park. They initially wanted it to become parking, and they offered to either lease the land for 30 years from the city or to buy it outright. Going back through, Jason Welker, City Community Planning Development Director, did some digging. He found that there's a covenant, I believe, from the 1920s that said that land has to be used for park purposes only. And so Avril Hospitality kind of came back and said, okay, well, what if you made it boat parking and a multi-use space and other things like that? That would keep it within the covenant so that the city would still own the land or that Avril Hospitality could own the land. So what's going to happen tonight is that we'll kind of be brought before the council and they'll make a decision on whether they'll direct staff to either, you know, think about leasing the land. In the staff report, Jason Welker doesn't think that they would be able to sell the land with that covenant in place. So it's primarily talking about leasing or basically saying, no, we're not going to lease that land. It's going to remain public. The city's going to continue owning it. And that's a decision that will be made tonight.
Maybe.
Well, maybe. Yeah. They could also say, I mean, we want to talk about it.
It does seem like this popped up. It wasn't on my radar.
No, my conversations on and off the record, I guess, with city folks is that, I kind of caught them by surprise too. And complicating matters is that the city's been working on a $1 million Idaho Department of Parks and Rec grant.
Yeah, they got it.
Yeah.
They got nearly $1 million to renovate the RV park.
And so this kind of sideswipes that whole effort in a way. I mean, depending on what they decide, if they decide anything tonight.
I haven't dug back, but I could swear that when the land swap was under discussion, where the previous property owner was swapping the land right in front of the Edgewater Hotel, which was owned by the city at that point, for this property where the RV park is, I could swear that the park plan I was looking at then was saying we're going to move the boat ramp to that place and have boat ramp parking there, boat trailer parking there. Does that ring a bell with you, Zach?
There were so many visions flying around about City Beach at that time. I mean, you have to remember this was also during the period of the downtown waterfront design competition that we did, where we sort of solicited various teams to come up with visions, quote unquote.
And that was definitely one of the visions. I think it was part of the Blue Necklace vision,
right,
was to move it there. And I thought, well, okay, that does make sense because right now we do have a situation where the boat ramp, when you're where people are walking to try to get on the trail, or little kids running to get to the beach, and they have all this boat trailer traffic going in and out. It's pretty congested.
Yeah.
But it sounds like they must have totally changed that plan because they got $1 million grant.
Well, they pretty well just kind of trash canned the whole waterfront competition.
The Blue Necklace thing.
I mean, all of it. I mean, that was one of the things that I think that Mayor Grimm ran on, sort of, was to like get rid of some of these plans that had a vision that maybe we didn't all agree with, or that were, were considered kind of a waste of money, that were biting off way more than we could chew. And so I don't think that any of those visions or plans or whatever are actually active right now, which is maybe why we're in the position we're in, is that, you know, certain developers might have looked at those plans back in that time and thought, well, wow, City of Sandpoint is going to redevelop this whole city beach, so why don't we be a part of that? Mm-hmm. And then that plan kind of goes away, and then suddenly we're like, well, give us the RV park then, if you're not going to do what we thought you were going to do.
Yeah, and in a late email, Avro Hospitality does reference one of those plans.
Right.
Actually, they say, you said you were going to turn this into a boat launch, so we kind of want to hold you to that a little bit. That is definitely a conversation that has been had.
Well, and it's interesting, too, to have this election, like, right in the middle of this big conversation, because these new council members are going to have to deal with all this.
Exactly. I was just going to say, so new council members, Joshua and Joe Tate, you guys are going to have a hot potato right from the go.
Well, at least they're going to have some time to sort of learn about the issues before they're responsible
for it. They won't take
office
until January.
Yeah,
but,
right.
Jack, were you successful in getting any of the council candidates to give you a little feedback last night?
I spoke to all three of them, actually.
All three of the winners.
Three of the winners, yeah. I didn't talk to Mr. Howarth, but I did speak to all three of them and actually ran into Josh Torres as I was on my way home. We bumped into each other at the gas station at about 11:30 last night. That's the way it goes in a small town, I guess. There's not many of us awake at that time. Yeah, we'll go in. Shall we go in alphabetical order here? Start with Joel. And there we go. This here's my conversation with Joel Aspero. And yeah, all three of these, just like Chris's, all three of these took place pretty late last night and kind of just off the cuff conversations. Here's Joel. I'm speaking now to Joel Aspero, who has just won another term on city council. Joel, can I ask you how many is this now?
This was my
third term. Okay.
Yeah.
And you were the top vote getter tonight with 1,398 votes. But it was a pretty close election all in all. The difference between Joshua Torres and Rick Howarth came down to just 18 votes, was the difference between.
Crazy.
Just a few quick questions here on election night. What's your reaction to the results of this city council election?
Yeah, good question. First, I want to congratulate Joey Tate and Joshua Torres. They worked very hard, and their work that they put in, they saw good results. So I want to congratulate them. And again, to Rick Howarth, and even though he didn't win, he did a good job as well. And it's been an honor to sit next to him. But yeah, I feel very thankful and feel very honored. It's always a humbling experience to see that, to see your name on there, whether you're first or third or second, it doesn't matter. It's the people putting their trust in you, and it's always a humbling experience, and I try not to take that for granted.
What is your top goal for the upcoming term, or any goals that come to mind at this hour?
I mean, with the bond, that's really awesome to see that pass as well, is to move forward with that. And I think continue to educate people on what that looks like. There's still, I think, a lot of questions, and we want to maintain transparency with the community. And I think that's another thing that the mayor, when he got elected, is he wanted to continue to do more meetings with the public and town halls and things of that nature. And I think to continue to do that moving forward with the community on any major issue would be important to continue to build trust with them. There's a couple things I'd like to work on, and you might just have to wait for those.
Yeah. Well, actually, my third question was going to be, what's your reaction to the wastewater bond passing? But I guess you kind of just filled us in on that.
I mean, honestly, I'm surprised, to be completely honest. I did not think it was going to pass.
Yeah.
I thought we were going to have to go in more education mode. But so not only did it passed pretty with flying colors, it seems.
Yep.
Unless I missed something.
No, looks, yeah, that's what it looks like here. I mean, yeah, 89% to 11%.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. So so I would say my reaction is like, whoa, I'm actually surprised. I was more in the mindset of like getting ready to go back to education. But doesn't look like we have to do that.
Yeah. Let's see. Well, that's it. I just wanted to ask those, just get a quick night of reaction from you. And unless there's anything else you'd like to say, we can leave it there. Anything in closing?
No, I just want to thank Sandpoint community for trusting me again. I'm going to do my best and work hard to be a counselor that you voted for. And I am so thankful. So appreciate the call. And again, Craig, congratulations to everybody.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Joel. Congratulations. Have a good night.
All right. Take care, brother.
Yeah. Bye. I'm speaking now to Joe Tate, who received 1,216 votes in the city council election, which gives him a seat on the next Sandpoint City Council. Sure. Number one, what's your reaction to the results of this city council election?
I'm happy. I'm very humbled by, being chosen to do this. It's definitely a big responsibility, and I'm really, humbled is probably the best word for sure.
What is your top goal or any particular goal that comes to mind for the upcoming term?
Oh man, just to, probably just to try to hit the ground running, get into the know of kind of like the dynamics of the city and how the council operates, and just kind of start strong. Like I want to start strong with a lot of collaboration and, see if, a couple new people on city council can start some good momentum into the next year. I think there's just a lot of chaos going on, not just in our town, but in our country. And it'd be nice to try to bring a little calm and order for our little slice of heaven.
Let's see. One other thing, the City of Sandpoint Special Municipal Revenue Bond, the Wastewater Treatment Plant Bond, passed pretty handily, actually. Good. almost 90%, 89% to 11%, basically. Any reaction to that bond passing?
I'm very happy that passed. I don't know if any of us wanted to understand the extent of what would happen if it didn't pass.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just happy that we can kind of address this issue that has been passed on to us by our predecessors. And from what I'm just gathering, it was just the most fiscally responsible way to guarantee that we had the right funding for the right for the right task situation. And hopefully we don't have to have any emergency repairs, and we can start being proactive and getting the septic system up to date.
Anything else you'd like to say? That's pretty much the end of my questions, and I know it's pretty late, so thanks for staying up.
I know there's some pressing things that are going on. I know city council meeting will be there tomorrow, and I'm obviously not going to be sitting in as a councilman, but I'll be there as a participating member of the town, and I know there's a few things that are coming up on the docket, and as far as kind of a few pressing issues that are happening within the city right now. So I just hope the current council can finish strong and, just kind of let, give us the new council is going to take over in January, I'm assuming. And I just hope whatever can be done now will the next council will be grateful for the current council.
Yeah. It should be an interesting council meeting tomorrow for sure.
Sure.
I
think there's going to be a lot of people showing up for it.
Yeah. Thanks very much for your time and congratulations again.
Thank you.
I think I can call you council member elect Joe Tate.
Perfect. Take it. Okay. I'll take it. Official. All right. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. Good night. Bye-bye. I'm speaking now to Joshua Torres, who is going to be taking a seat on Sandpoint City Council next term. And we just have a few questions for you tonight on the night of the election. The polls the results are finally just now in. Question number one, what's your reaction to the results of this city council election?
I am super humbled. This means a lot to me. This community came together for me, and that warms my heart.
It is, of course, late at night on election night. Things change in the morning or whatever. But from where you're sitting right now, do you have any top goals for the upcoming term that you can tell us?
My commitment is to keeping Sandpoint, and remain strong, and just prioritize our community's values and protect our unique character. We've got a lot to do, so I'm just ready to get to work.
Any reaction to the wastewater treatment bond passing? It passed with about 89% to 11%. Pretty clearly people voted in favor of that special municipal revenue bond.
I am very proud of our town, and I personally will ensure that I can do everything I can to make sure that this is as transparent and as awesome as possible for everybody.
Yeah. Those are my three questions. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we sign off here?
Thanks, dude. I appreciate everything that you guys have done, and I'm super excited, and I appreciate everything. So thank you.
Good.
That's it.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thanks for talking, and congratulations again.
Thank you, my friend. Take care.
Yeah, have a good night.
Bye. Okay, bye.
We're back live in the studio. That was Josh Torres, incoming city council member, as well as just before him, we heard Joe Tate and Joel Aspero. All of them reached late last night after polls closed and the results were in. Let's see. I'm going to go down what I take away from those conversations. Joel Aspero, surprised by the wastewater treatment plant bond. I think maybe not everybody, I was certainly surprised by the number that came in. I think as we got closer to election day, people can go back and listen to the recordings of the programs that we made to check me on this, but there were certainly times that I doubted that it was going to pass at all. Towards the end, I did think it was going to pass. Zach Hagedon is here from the Sandpoint Reader again, and we're also with Jack Freeman from the Bonner County Daily Bee. Chris Bessler had to step out. Just wrapping up the election a little bit, and that wastewater bond, we were talking to Ben Olson, also of the Sandpoint Reader, on Friday, and I think our kind of takeaway from that was that since there was no organized opposition against it, it did seem likely to pass. There was not a super strong organization in favor of it either. So it was hard to say, but I'll correct the record on that a little bit and just say that the Idaho Conservation League did come out in favor of that measure. And they did do some canvassing, at least this past weekend. There were actually people out knocking on doors. I think I only saw one, but I did see one yard sign that said Save Our Sewer on it. I'm not sure if that was just homemade and a one-off or if there were people actually distributing those, but I saw at least one out there. So there was some measure of organization in favor of passing that bond, and maybe that's what made the margin so dramatic.
I mean, I know that we published at least two op-eds from ICL that were sort of in favor of the bond measure.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about you, Jack, at the B, but we had a fair number of letters to the editor, you know, over the course of the past few months with folks saying, like, we need to do this for, you know, protect clean water, you know, just environmental sort of angle, what seemed to be what really resonated. I mean, I didn't hear a whole lot of stuff about, like, you know, the tax issue, the ratepayer issue didn't seem to really rile a lot of people too much. But mostly what I saw was, like, we need to do this for the health of our environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw that a little bit, too. I think also the city did a really good job of letting people know that, hey, no matter what happens with this bond, you're not voting down the project. The project will continue. And the couple of people who I spoke to just kind of out and about on election day, I asked them about this, and they said, well, if it's going to happen, why would we make it harder on ourselves?
Right. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Good point. They did. It wasn't sort of a yes or no to the project. It was yes or no to this funding mechanism that seemed to be the only one that they developed a good plan for.
Well, and I think that's important to note, too, is that what we're really talking about here is not so much $130 million. It's the authority to seek up to $130 million. So there is, I think, the messaging was pretty apt on the part of the city by clarifying, like, this: we're not obligating ourselves to $130 million of debt. Like, what we're doing is we're enabling the city to seek that amount of money through various sources, which could be grants, could be low-interest loans, could be any number of different things. It's like they just wanted the permission of the voters to seek up to that amount of money, which also includes, like, 40% contingency on the project, too. So we may not actually see that amount of money get borrowed or secured, but that's the ceiling. Like, that's as much as we can seek.
Yeah. The language is, shall the city of Sandpoint, Bonner County, Idaho, issue and sell its negotiable revenue bonds in the amount up to $130 million for the purpose of financing the design, acquisition, in construction of certain improvements to the city's wastewater system and facilities, the system constituting and being operated as a revenue-producing public utility, and to pay expenses properly incident thereto, including costs, issuance of such bonds, said bonds due in such installments as fixed by the City Council of the city, the last installment due and payable not more than 40 years from the date of the bonds, as more fully provided in Ordinance Number 1430, adopted by the City Council of the city on August 20th, 2025. Such revenue bonds shall be payable from the revenues of the system as improved and not from ad valorem property taxes. As I read it, it's not the clearest language. I mean, it's very legalese. So the fact that it passed so handily, I think, means that those voters who voted on it were clearly knew, they hadn't educated themselves to some extent. That would be a hard thing to go into the election booth not knowing exactly what the issue was, or not having heard about it before, and make a clear decision in favor, I would think. But anyway, that's me. That's my opinion as a voter, that would be something that I would balk at if I hadn't learned about it beforehand, what exactly they were looking at.
Well, I think just to drill a little bit further into that, like, if you look at the precinct by precinct breakdown for that wastewater bond, you know, some of the percentages are enormous. Like the beach precinct, 92% were in favor. The Washington district, 91.5% in favor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those are also precincts that are sort of like near to the facility.
True.
Also.
Yeah.
So I think there is sort of like, it's in their neighborhood.
Yeah.
So they know what the issue is. They know, like, they smell the smells.
yeah.
And they're just, I mean, they're just part of town where, you know, people read a lot of newspapers there. they listen mm-hmm. to the radio.
mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly yeah. right. That's probably what it was. Yes. Listening to the radio. Okay. I do have, Chris was nice enough to record a conversation last night with Mayor Steve Geiger of Ponderay, talking about the city of Ponderay local option tax. I don't want to move on from that. If there is anything more we want to say about the election here in Sandpoint, that wastewater bond passing, I don't know. A pretty clear mandate to move forward, I guess, is right. what it seems like.
And yeah. It'll be exciting to see them what they come up with. Like,
yeah.
To actually reach that mm-hmm. financing level they need.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now it'll be interesting to see how they proceed, because now that they've got it, Mayor Grimm has made it quite clear that that's just the first step, and that pursuing mm-hmm. these loans and what they really want is grants is going to be even more difficult than this election.
Right, absolutely. Well, and the grant landscape right now is very unsettled.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the federal government's not really in a position to help with a lot of this stuff right now. I mean, considering mm-hmm. the fact that it's shut down.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they do have a long road to travel.
I guess one more thing I'll mention, just referring to that conversation I had last night with Joe Tate. I believe he brought up the importance of tonight's city council meeting. He's going to attend, but just as a citizen, he's not going to be on the dais until January. He said that he hopes the current council does a good job that the next city council can build on. And I think clearly it didn't become a factor in this election, the new Averill Hospitality developments, just because the story broke so late in the game. But clearly something that he's an issue he's following. And if I could, you know, read between the lines, he didn't sound to me too happy about the new developments, and I think he's got some major concerns with the way the city's gonna develop. Josh Torres also mentioned keeping Sandpoint being a priority for him. So I guess we'll see what the new or what transpires tonight, and then what the new city council does. It is a tough position to be in. Yeah, I guess my last thought is just that I think, you know, Tate and Torres both seem very motivated to get on city council. I mean, they both ran strong campaigns, at least in different ways. And Joe Tate is probably a better known name. His family's been here. He grew up here, you know, born and raised. So that could explain his margin of victory, which is still pretty minor, but he came in second place. Neither of them in a campaign like this, there weren't any real opponents to each other, so it was hard to and they all seemed to want to keep it very friendly and cordial, knowing that they would be seated on the dais with two of the three people who would have been there opponents in the election. So it makes it a little complicated when you have makes elections different here in Sandpoint and in municipalities where it's just at large and a single at large election. Maybe it keeps things friendlier, or maybe it kind of keeps things a little muddier, a little murkier than it would have been if there had been clear a single district or a single area where people were competing for just one seat, they might have been able to draw clearer lines against each other.
And also being nonpartisan.
Yeah, and it's a nonpartisan election, that's right. Yeah. Okay, well, anyway, just throwing out my two cents there and what makes things a little different here as opposed to some of the other big elections that happened last night across the country.
Well, and Jack, just real quick, I mean,
sure.
I also don't want to kind of leave it with the notion that there wasn't any real differences between the candidates. And that mm-hmm. I also don't want to leave the impression that, you know, the community in general doesn't have preferences for some of these folks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've seen much of this lately, but I mean, there's a little bit of a pushback growing related to Joel Espiro.
Yeah.
There have been some folks, and there's going to be some letters to the editor. I'm sure the B might have some at some point, but I know we do.
Yeah.
Where people are kind of starting to get a little bit upset with his long-term incumbency on the council. And, you know, they're upset about sort of the votes that he's made in the past related to the James E. Russell Center and the Travers Park stuff. You know, he's made some comments about women's reproductive health care that have rubbed people the wrong way. So, I mean, it's not all happy-go-lucky,
yeah.
I guess. I mean, it might be a little small town, you know, fun. You know, everybody gets along, hangs out at the gas station.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there is a little bit of resistance, I think, building. And I think that's why you saw two challengers, two newcomers. I mean, there was a push, like, to get some fresh voices, quote-unquote, on the council. And the reason for that is that people are upset with some of the decisions that have been made. Related to development, you know, we referenced this Averill hospitality thing that's going to be at the meeting tonight for city council. The dissatisfaction over what happened at Travers Park has not gone away for a lot of people. And if you were an incumbent and you were there, you know, making these votes, then the voters will, you know, they spoke to that.
Yeah.
Joel Espiro still, of course, got the highest number of votes because he's a popular guy, but I don't want to leave it with the notion that everyone's like 100% hunky-dory happy about everything that's going on with the council, because that's never going to be the case, and it probably shouldn't be.
Yeah,
which is also why you see somebody like Rick Howarth, who was an incumbent,
yeah,
although didn't run, you know, yeah, for his – he was appointed by the mayor,
yeah,
to fill a vacancy, that he didn't win re-election. That's also, I think, indicative of, you know, at least 18 voters had a feeling that maybe he wasn't the best person to be returned to that position. And I think that development and sort of growth and stuff like that informs a lot of those votes.
Yeah. No, a good point. I think, yeah, maybe what I was sort of fumbling towards there in my ramblings early this morning — it was a late night for me last night too — was just that there was a lot of it, especially with the challengers. There was energy. There were these were people inspired to run for office, to challenge for these seats. They didn't want, yeah, to just for the city council to remain as it was. I was just, as the campaign progressed, it was hard to pinpoint any particular difference between them. I think I was expecting a little bit more, maybe for them to come out with a little more fire and brimstone against some of those particular decisions or to select particular issues. And it didn't transpire that way during the campaign, but at least not in the public campaign that we were able to see in the press and hear on the radio. But when people were talking one-on-one, maybe things came out a little differently. And this is a small town, and one-on-one matters a lot. Should we move on to Ponderay? Any other final wisdom from you, Jack, before we do?
No, let's move on to Ponderay. Let's
okay.
Give him a little love.
Okay, here we go. Steve Geiger, the mayor of Ponderay, spoke to Chris Bessler late last night, and we'll hear him for about 2 minutes and 54 seconds.
Mayor Steve Geiger, thank you for taking time to talk with us. Well, the results are in, and it looks like the Ponderay local option tax passed with a very handy margin. What's top of mind for you?
Well, I think this is such a great thing for our city, and it's going to give us the opportunity to continue on the projects that we have started. And I'd like to just thank all the Ponderay voters who came out and supported their city continuing on with these projects and by passing the local option tax again. Again, like I said, we are going to continue work on the Field of Dreams, the Lakeshore Connection Project. We've also committed $500,000 every year out of this tax for roads infrastructure and stormwater improvement projects. And one of my favorites, Chris, is we've committed up to $2 million for an endowment fund for the maintenance of the Field of Dreams and parks in our city. So with the support of our city, we've given our youth opportunities in the future that would not have been possible without their support. And I just can't thank our community enough.
So it won, as I think these results are final now, with 77.7% in favor. I think it's just a year ago, right, that it didn't pass. Why do you think it switched so much?
I don't know, Chris. You know, last time it was the national election. We had other ballot measures, like, you know, Sandpoint was running theirs. I think that there was some confusion at the time. And, you know, I don't know. We've done really good with our bed tax in May, and now this with over, you know, like you say, 77%. And it's just, I got to say, the last time it was pretty odd when we had over 460 or 80 votes in the last election and over 88% turnout. And now here we've had about 177 votes. So I don't know what happened to all those other people, but I'm thankful for the ones who did get out there and support us this time. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, Mayor Steve Geiger, any last word you'd like to throw in?
No, I just guess I would say, again, thank you to our community and standing with us, doing great things for the future of our city and giving our youth opportunities that are going to impact their life. And we cannot thank you enough.
Well, congrats on the win.
Thank you so much, Chris.
All right, good night.
Good night.
Okay, we're back here live in the studio, Jack Peterson, and I'm here with Zach Hagedon and Jack Freeman for just a few last minutes. Also, a correction came in over the hotline in the last few minutes that the Idaho Conservation League wasn't the only group canvassing. I believe the Sandpoint Moms were out this past weekend as well in favor of that bond measure that passed so overwhelmingly. So credit to them as well for in part for that margin. But let's talk about Pondere, since that's who we just heard from. I think it's probably safe to say that having this on the ballot in a non-national election year, in an off-year election, contributes to that passing. And it was quite a margin as well. The last one was, I believe they made it over 50% last year. It was close to 50%. They needed 60%. This time around, again, needing 60%, and they came out at 77% to 22%. So a pretty overwhelming. I don't know. This is, I guess, the little city with the big future continues to grow. They've got big plans for this, and at least 10 years for funding.
This is KRFY 88.5 Pondere.
It's 9 o'clock in the morning. And it's, it's time for bird note, but I guess in closing, City of Pondere is in an interesting position. Able to pass these, levies, at least when they come up at the right time. A lot of the spending in Pondere, as we know, goes to those big box stores. A lot of the money coming from outside of the city itself, and now some of the revenue going back to Pondere for funding those projects like the Field of Dreams. They're not anywhere near passing that 10,000 citizen threshold. So this is something that this is kind of a course that they could possibly follow before a good time into the foreseeable future.
Right. Pondere is in kind of a very unique position as a community. I mean, and I remember talking about this years and years ago before we even had this big growth explosion of the past couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, you know, Pondere having a very small sort of like population of residents,
mm-hmm,
is really an economic hinge for the entire sort of panhandle, like our area of North Idaho. So the small population of people, big population of businesses, and the way that the tax revenue moves in and out of that community is very strange. So much of the taxes that are collected from like sales tax and whatnot and all these big sort of commercial retailer type places, mm-hmm, goes to Boise. Doesn't actually stay in Pondere.
Yeah.
And this has been sort of a bedeviling problem for Pondere politicians, you know, mayors going back 20 years. Mm-hmm. Is how do we have all this economic activity and then not be able to capture as much of it as we should be able to,
yeah,
to support sort of the infrastructure that commercial activity relies on.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe the community members in Ponderay have really gotten that lesson over the years that, like, they need to find any way they can to sort of, like, benefit from all the economic activity that occurs around them, instead of, you know, that revenue going to places like Boise or to the federal government or, you know, whoever, like larger units of government, and how you can keep that money at home in Ponderay to grow the community in the way that it wants to grow. And I think that in the past couple of years, I've been really kind of surprised to see how Ponderay has sort of, like, invigorated a civic kind of identity. You know, the Field of Dreams, you know, the Ponderay Bay Trail stuff, the, you know, trying to get their waterfront developed in a way that it's accessible to people who live in Ponderay.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not the Ponderay that I remember from when I was, you know, a kid back in the 90s, when that was where you went to go to the Bonner Mall, you know, or Kmart.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, it wasn't really like a place that you would consider to be like a downtown, you know, or, you know, sort of like, there's neighborhoods for sure, but it's a different kind of place from Sandpoint. And I feel like what they've been doing over the past couple of years has really moved Ponderay out of that kind of retails exurb kind of situation to really building a community spirit.
Yeah.
And it's going to be really interesting to see how that develops over the next probably 10 to 15, 20 years. Cause right now they're working on a comp plan, which is going to change how that community envisions itself over the next few years, decades. So I expect big things out of Ponderay. I mean, the little city with a big future, you know, it's been on the sign for a long time, but I feel like that big future is kind of like starting to come into a little bit more focus.
Yeah.
And votes like this indicate that there is that spirit in that community to invest in this stuff.
Yeah, I think exactly the same thing about that community spirit.
Yeah.
When you look at what this was going to go toward, a lot of the Field of Dreams maintenance, I think that's a project that people really believe in and could benefit even residents in Sandpoint and the surrounding areas. So I think not only is it building a community, but it's becoming a hub for more than just economic activity. You know, I was talking with our sports guy, Max, and he said, hey, if these renovations go in, they could host high school sports championships at the Field of Dreams.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be another reason that people would come there. And so I think this vote kind of keys in on a huge investment in the future of that. And also, like you said, building a sense of community that it's a place to be proud of to be in.
Yeah. We are out of time here. So I thank you both, Zach Hagedon, Editor-in-Chief of the Sandpoint Reader, and Jack Freeman, Staff Reporter for the Bonner County Daily Bee, for coming in and talking for the full hour the morning after the election with some hot takes. Chris Bessler was here for the first half hour, and we appreciate his input as well. Thank you very much. It is time for Bird Note. I'm sure we'll be talking. We'll be reading more. That's one thing for sure about the election results in the Bee and the Reader. You're on newsstands on Thursday. Tomorrow you'll have your election coverage in this Thursday's Reader.
I always like doing these sort of morning after sort of radio chats with you because it helps me sort of like write it in my head. So now I'm going to go back to the office and just write whatever I just said.
Okay. And well, if you prefer to read it, try the Reader. Right. And Jack, you're on newsstands every day. Well, 6 days a week.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
And watch for reporting on tonight's city council meeting as well. That's sure to be a doozy.
It's going
to
be a late one.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for listening to 88.5 KRFY Ponderay.